It's Wednesday, August 21st, 2013, and you're listening to episode 308 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 51 minutes. Welcome
balls.
To
Balls.
Sorry, not to laugh at balls.
You got your balls in Dan's mouth there.
Achievement unlocked. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
This is Julia.
All right. First off, I want to congratulate Chad.
Oh, thank you.
For bringing home we actually didn't go to Gen Con this year.
It's getting mailed to my home.
For phoning in
yes.
a Nenny Award for his game Silent Memories. I want to thank all of you guys that voted
thank
for
you.
Him.
Thank you very much.
It's totally gone to his head, and now anytime we talk to him,
He demands
that we refer to him as any award winning Chad.
Yeah,
I haven't decided it's on any award winning writer or any award winning game designer. I mean, I don't know.
It's one step below Monty Cook's Chad.
That's right.
Wait, he just makes me bow to him.
That's right.
But I do want to thank all of you guys who went out there and voted for him. Obviously,
yes,
it's
thank you very much.
Really cool that Chad was able to win that for his game Silent Memories.
And I actually do have to apologize to the Innie people. Months and months and months ago, I submitted to the Innies on a whim, just goofing around.
Sure.
And I made a Facebook post right after I do that, a very sarcastic one saying, oh, gee, you know, ha, 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 I just did the Innie. I just submitted to an Innie. And there's no way that they're going to pick a book that has no art, that's only 20 pages long, that isn't even formatted. It's just basically a plain text document. There's no way they're going to do this. And they read that and they did it just to embarrass me publicly. So I'm sorry. I posted that.
Yeah.
So that's actually really cool.
And if you've not checked out Chad's games, once again, they are completely free. You have nothing to lose by checking them out.
And they're actually pretty fun, even though Chad made them.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true. So
I shocked myself.
I'll link that once again in the show notes in case you still have not checked out his game. And Chad, you've actually got some new ones in the cooker.
Yes, I have a new one called the Spider of My Mind. Julie's making a face like, ew.
Yeah.
But yes, this one is, we actually did the first play test over the weekend, and you guys seem to enjoy it. You guys seem to like it.
I like the mechanics of it. It is, it doesn't have a Jenga tower.
Yes, it has dice.
Oh my.
I have
what is this new technology?
I have a friend who's like a real D&D grognard, and I'm friends with him on Facebook. He was making fun of me because, you know, I don't really use dice and that sort of stuff. And he's like, you know, what do you like rules now? Because, you know, you don't usually like rules. And I'm like, no, I like rules. My first two games were diceless, but this new game has dice, but the dice don't have numbers on them. So, and he's like, I think you just broke me. So,
a game played entirely with the weather dice.
That's right.
A weather die and a mood die.
No,
it actually is a very fun mechanic that I haven't seen elsewhere. He's using the fate dice, and when you roll it, your positives count for what you did. The negatives are the side effects. So let's say you get two positives and two negatives. You succeeded in what you were trying to do, and now something bad happens.
The two things went wrong with it. That's kind of a cool mechanic.
It is.
In Fate, that would just neutralize out to a zero.
Right.
But instead of making it a zero sum, you just stack it all together. And
the players usually succeed.
Right. Because all
there
you
is
need is one plus.
Yeah, you need one plus to succeed. But there is usually consequence to those actions. You can like bank dice and spin dice, and then the game master, who is referred to as the doctor, that he can bank the negative dice and he can reward people.
Like, for example, you pick the lock, but you get chlamydia.
Oh my gosh. Wait a second.
So the whole premise is that you're insane. You're an insane murderer, like a serial killer or a pyromaniac or somebody horrible. You are playing a horrible, insane person who's murdered multiple people. That's the entire premise of the game. You've been caught and you're in an insane asylum. And then that's where we take the game. And there's all kind of other stuff that happens, too, that I'll get to that when I actually release the game. But like one thing that Wayne did is that there were all the inmates, right? It was the middle of the night, and Wayne wanted to kill a guy because he is redeeming them by killing them. He's freeing their soul for redemption because Wayne is really f-ing insane. So Wayne opens the lock and I had him roll, and he rolled like one success or something like that. So he opens it. He opens it successfully, and that's the thing. But he also rolled two consequences, and he got a chair right in the face. So, you know, it's those things happen.
And chlamydia.
And chlamydia. Well, everybody, it's like we're playing in 1850. So everybody has
everyone
chlamydia.
Had it.
It's like just a game. It's like the game Everybody's John, except it's chlamydia. Everybody's got chlamydia.
Everybody has chlamydia. Yeah.
So the other thing I wanted to mention here real quick is Chris's Kickstarter for Table Tales is still running. I'll link that in the show notes. If you've not had a chance to go out there and check out what he's doing, be sure to do that. By the time the show drops, there should still be, I think, about 2 weeks left on the Kickstarter. But it is winding down, so be sure to get out there and take a look at that. All right, first topic up today. I want you guys to name a game. It has to be a tabletop game, no computer games, all right? Now, I don't care if it's a card game, board game, role-playing game, anything you want.
Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Just,
oh, it's so good.
Just non-electronic, where you walked in thinking, this is going to be terrible. I'm only agreeing to play this because everybody else wants to do this. And by the end of it, you were sold. This game had won you over. What is that game? Julie, I'm going to start with you because you said something about a stacking game.
Oh, I didn't actually play it. And I just watched it happen, but I couldn't even tell you the name of it because I was falling asleep. But I was watching them play. And that's not the one that I was going to pick. But you stack bamboo. That's like the point of the game, is to make a really tall bamboo shoot, and there's panda figurines and stuff, and it's actually very strategic, even though all you're doing is stacking bamboo. Okay, it was really strange.
So what's the one you were
so
going
like
to
like
name?
Strips of bamboo, or like it's pieces like, of plastic, and you're making a replica
right,
of a bamboo
yeah
shoot.
Not actual bamboo. Gotcha. But pieces of plastic. The one I was gonna say is I had a friend for Christmas buy me a game called Wasabi. And
I've heard of it, but I've never played it.
I was like, a sushi game, this is going to be like ridiculously cheesy. Mm-hmm. But it is like the most fun ever. You get little recipe cards, and there's pieces of the ingredients like in tiles. And it's like a tile game where you have to create rolls of sushi on the tile. And you get cards to like move people's pieces of sushi around. It's a lot of fun. Mm. I was really surprised.
Mine is Powerboats. I think it's called Powerboats. It's been a couple of years since I played it. It's a speedboat racing game. Kind of like Formula D or Formula Day or however you pronounce it, but it's powerboats on a lake and you're racing powerboats and stuff around. And the board is really simple. It's just a lake and has some islands, and the little pieces are pretty simple. And it just didn't seem like there was much to it. And everyone who was at this board game meetup I went to, and everybody was like, oh my God, this is the best game. This is powerboats. I'm like, yeah. Hey, do you want to play Arkham? Do you want to play Battlestar Galactic? Do you want to play all this? No, let's play f-ing powerboats. And I'm just like, okay. And so we lined it out and I was playing it, and it's an okay game. It was pretty good until I won. Then it was f-ing awesome.
That
always
changes
helps.
Everything. Wayne?
I would have to say every collectible card game I've ever tried. Pokemon? I've played
Pokemon.
It.
Pokemon!
I've played it with Sarah and actually enjoyed playing it.
With the Pokemon.
Magic the Gathering, I thought would be horrible, but I've really enjoyed it. The Harry Potter game. Because I don't like Harry Potter. I've never read the books. I fell asleep during the first movie.
The first movie was pretty
I bad. Do think the movies got better because I've seen them all, but I'm not a Harry Potter fan. The Harry Potter card game is a kid's version of Magic. You can still have a lot of fun. It is the same thing as Magic the Gathering, only stripped down to kids' version of the rules. I expected to be bored to tears, to hate the game, and I actually had fun because it basically was Magic.
For me, I'm going to go with Roll Through the Ages. Have any of you guys ever played Roll Through the Ages?
Yeah.
No, I've never played it.
Okay. I played it over here.
Now, how you play Roll Through the Ages, and I've only played it once and it's been a little bit, so I apologize in advance. I'm a bit off on the rules. But you have like so many turns, and during those turns, you have advancements to make to your civilization. It's actually in some ways kind of like a simplified version of Civ, except it's done where you just have like a pad of paper and some dice.
It's like having Civ meets Yahtzee.
Yeah, that's honestly, I'm glad you chose that because that is exactly what came to my mind as well as Yahtzee, because you have, I think it's about five dice. And you have your own little scorecard. But what happens is on each turn, you roll those five dice, and those five dice represent the output of your civilization. which could be food, could be labor, could, I don't remember what all the options were. And you basically strategize how you're going to spend or bank those and how ambitious you want to be. Do you want to play a long game or a short game or whatever? And when I first saw this game, it looked pretty dumb. I'm like, eh, this is just going to be a really tedious sort of game. But I actually really ended up enjoying it, and I haven't gotten around to doing so. But one of these years, I'm going to pick it up and buy it because I really enjoyed playing it.
Yeah, it's that one and Sorrow are the two that surprised me Sorrow's the most, great. I think.
Sorrow was going to be my second choice. If it had not been Roll Through the Ages, Sorrow would have been my second choice.
Sorrow didn't surprise me. I didn't know if it was going to be good or bad, and I didn't have an opinion on whether it would be good or bad because I thought it was very beautiful. The box was lovely.
100%
the cards
agree.
Were lovely, and it's just like that sold me, and I'm like, I want to play this game just to see what it's about because it's the production value of this very simple
sure.
game is great.
No, and I agree with you on that. It has a beautiful production value, but to me, that's not going to carry a game.
No, yeah.
And so when I sat down to play it the first time, it was pitched to me as well. It's kind of this rock garden sort of thing where you set out paths and
you play a dragon on a rock that's on a rail till you fall off and die.
Precisely. And your
wow,
and your goal
fun at all.
Is but it's really
but
fun.
It is.
And your
I
goal
know,
is to
play.
Be the last dragon to fall off the edge
not
of the
dragon,
map.
Not a dragon, you're a dragon on a rock.
Yeah, your goal is to be the last rock that just so happens to have a dragon on it to fall off the edge of the map. And it sounded so boring, mm-hmm. but when we actually played it, it plays very fast. Yes. I mean, it seriously plays in about 10, 15 minutes tops. And it was a ton of fun to play. And I also like the fact that it's got a lot of accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a game that you can teach anyone. You can teach
I've
kids
played it
very
with my mom.
Easily.
My mom doesn't do board games.
Yeah.
And I had no problem telling her, here's what you do. It just takes a couple seconds and you've got someone playing.
Yeah, exactly. People who are outside the normal realm of that kind of stuff can very quickly get into that.
And it's just as much fun with two players as it is with a table because the play experience is completely different.
It goes a little slower, but yeah, I would agree with you.
I'll have to check it out. That sounds like a lot of fun.
So last time we started answering a question that Morgan had sent in to us about how do you create a campaign finale? In a sense, we answered the question without answering the question, which is why I want to come back to it in this episode. Because what we did, I guess, if I was to describe it in a phrase, is try and kind of liberate people's minds from this idea that a campaign finale has to be a boss fight, which, as we said last time, is not per se a bad ending, but is not the required ending. But we never really answered the question of how do you decide in what way to end a campaign. So you have all these options before you, which we talked about last episode. What I want to know from you guys, whether as players or as game masters, when you are in a campaign, what kinds of things go through your mind to create a satisfying or an unsatisfying ending to the campaign? How do you guys pick how the story should end? And we'll come back to epilogues. I'm not talking about epilogues. I'm talking about the climax. We'll talk about the finale here.
Yeah.
All right, we'll come back to epilogues
not
either later.
Not the Lord of the Rings 45 minutes of
right.
saying goodbye
and
crying.
And you know what? That can be cool in an RPG. We'll
no,
come
we
back to... no, well, maybe not that much. But we'll come back to that later, okay? So here we're just talking about the climax of the story, the finale of the story, not necessarily the epilogue.
It's actually really easy for me because... I don't know if you know this, but I improv a lot when I run a game.
No, you don't.
What I do is I think about, here's how I'd kind of like to start it and get things going. And this is how I would like to end it. And then I think about different events and stuff that I want to see happen in the middle of it. Going into a game, I already know how I want to end. Maybe the specifics and stuff will change over time.
Right.
But I've already got a destination in mind. I don't really know how long it'll take us to get there. I'm really bad at pacing a game, but I know my direction and I know when I get there. I think part of the balance, too, is not when I get there, but how fast I get there. And then that's my calculus, is what's my interest in the game? What are the players' interests in the game? How long have we been playing? Is interest starting to wane? If interest is starting to wane, then we need to maybe wrap it up. If players are talking about something different, you know, there's a lot of know your group sort of thing. For me, it really isn't so much of that punch point in the story. You know, when would this make the greatest, best amount of sense in the story? But for me, it's like, when would be the best time for the people playing the game to kind of start to wrap this up?
That's something that I've seen as well when I game master. And this doesn't always happen, but this is one of the approaches that I've taken. Because when you go to run a game, as a game master, you are investing more into the game than the players are. So if you just look at the effort, the emotion, the amount of juggling, and I don't want to diminish the contributions that players are making or how those ought to be regarded by any stretch of the imagination, because I think that would be absolute folly. But the game master does make an investment above and beyond what the players do, because they have to construct a world and keep everything moving and keep the action going. And I think players should be proactively involved in this, but you get my point. And as a game master, one of the approaches that I have taken is saying, when I tell this story, there are certain things I want out of it. And what I want out of it could be themes. It could be particular types of stories. It could be a type of a plot arc. For example, I want this to have a lot of moral quandary. I want the players to really decide who they're allied with and who their enemies with, you know, and really kind of see how the world plays out. But another possibility is that I look at it and say, here are these pieces. And they're not super defined. They're not super scripted. But I say, you know what? It'd be really cool if there was a scene where somebody got shocked to find out his wife has been betraying him this whole time. Or it turns out that the guy that they thought was the big bad was actually a puppet of a very manipulative but otherwise completely unimpressive individual or something like that. And I get these rough concepts. And Chad, as you said, you cannot lock these into stone because you don't know, as the players interact with the world, how these things are going to change up and how you're going to have to adjust them. But nonetheless, I do at least have these very loose ideas that I want to see pop up at some point in the campaign. And the ending might be one of those. I might say, you know, I want an ending where they're standing at the top of a ziggurat and lightning's crashing around them and the world's about to end. And to save the day, they have to either sacrifice someone they love or sacrifice themselves. And that's a concept I want to play with. And I don't know exactly how that's going to work out. I don't know who the other person's going to be. I don't know which player character is going to be happy to make that call. I don't even necessarily know what the ziggurat is. But it's, you know, you get my point. Mm-hmm. It's there's this feeling, there's this moment that I want to find some way to capture in the game. Drawing this back a little bit, I think that there are three questions that I would ask myself whenever designing the end of a campaign. First off, what is the campaign about? Now, there may be one thing you think this campaign is about when you start the game, but there may be another thing that starts to become true as the game takes on a life of its own.
I have definitely seen that happen.
Give me an example, Wayne.
The first arc of the Dresden campaign. There was the plot that everyone was going for, trying to stop the Native American gods. And out of nowhere, it became a let's kill the head vampire in town. Did not see that one coming at all. But it's what they latched onto.
Forgot.
About what the real thing.
About the Native American gods. Yeah. Well, it's sort of like we half forgot and half stopped caring
about it.
And
yeah.
It wasn't that we stopped caring as people. The players were like, oh, man, we got fit. The characters didn't care about like all this politics, because all of our characters were like, you know,
screw politics.
Yeah, screw politics. And, you know, it's like we'd rather party on the landing and do that sort of stuff. And this is like deep politics. And we're just like,
see, we've
actually ancient evil. Let's kill it.
My gaming group has actually broke modules really bad. Like one of the ending bosses in a Pathfinder module was a dragon, and we tethered it to a castle and made it bow to us, essentially, because we were so powerful. Nice. That wasn't supposed to happen. So we got double experience points because we did two of the options.
Almost triple experience points.
It was bad. And then the big bad was like, if I told you the story, I would just go on forever because the way we defeated this thing was ridiculous. Basically, I one-shotted the thing. It was a freaking big bad, and I was just like, die. And we're like, oh, okay, that was uneventful. Yay, modules.
The most recent Battletech game that I ran, when the campaign started out, it was supposed to be, at its core, about a slow-building mystery. And the main feel, the main substance that the players were going to keep coming back to was this mystery. But as the campaign started to unfold, and Wayne, who was the successor to the owner of the Mercenary Corps, died, leaving behind a wife who was pregnant with his child, who technically owned it, but really wasn't in a position to lead it, who was then kind of entrusting the whole thing to John's character, who was not in the line of succession to own the Mercenary Corps, but was nonetheless militarily capable of running it. And the game very much shifted. The mystery was still there. It was still part of the campaign. But if you look at what the campaign was about, it suddenly became about this human drama, basically between the characters in their search for identity. And Chad, at the same time, you were playing the Curtin, who's a Japanese guy who was in House Steiner, a German house that's been at war with House Kurita for hundreds of years. And there was this search for identity, the search for purpose, the search for a reason to live. And that became a really big question for all the characters. What's going on still mattered, but who you are going to be as individuals and as a group is what the campaign came to be about. I mean, for example, let me do a deconstruction of Star Trek True Wrath of Khan. I'm sure geeks will navel gaze and wank till the end of the earth on what that movie was about. And quite frankly, maybe I'm doing no better right now. But let me give you my take on that movie. And I base this actually upon reading some of the behind the scenes of how that movie came together and some of the difficulties that they had getting William Shatner in particular to sign on to do Wrath of Khan. But what that movie was about more than anything else was James Kirk, who had spent the entirety of his career at the top of his game, effectively being taken to the end of his rope. It was about him being broken as a person and realizing his own weaknesses, which is why William Shatner originally did not want to be in the movie, because he wanted James Kirk to be this kind of infallible character. And the idea that even though he blows up the Reliant, ultimately he loses, because Khan takes from him the things that were most precious to him. That was really, I guess, in a way you could say what the movie was about, is Kirk's character journey to realizing he's created problems he can't control, and ultimately he has to pay a very high price to solve those problems. But that's not the plot of the movie. The plot of the movie is Khan has showed up for revenge, he's stolen a Federation vessel, he's stolen the Genesis torpedo, and he's trying to destroy the Enterprise and kill everybody. The Enterprise, in the meantime, is trying to struggle to defeat him and survive. So there's a plot, but then there's a separate thing that I would identify as what the movie is about. And I think this is not always going to be true. Sometimes these things are identical. But in the case of campaigns, you can have games where one thing is the plot, but there's another thing that it's about. And I think that you have to understand when you go to make your finale that the finale does not just wrap up the plot, it wraps up what it is about. If the Wrath of Khan had ended with the Reliant being destroyed and without Spock's funeral, that movie would not have been complete, because Kirk's character journey and his growth would not have occurred. But with that Battletech game, which unfortunately we didn't get to the end of, but if that had ended with you guys solving the mystery, but the interpersonal issues, but Chad, your character, Jiro, not knowing who he was or why he ought to live, John's character really not understanding precisely what his role meant, Wayne's character's widow not really understanding what, if anything, she wanted to do with this property she had inherited. If I had not answered or dealt with any of those things in the finale,
it would feel incomplete.
Yeah, exactly. The whole story would be absolutely incomplete.
Well, I'm getting ready to run a dressing campaign, and I actually have it all spelled out. I talked about it on the Kids in the Dice Bags episode. But what I've decided to do, and I find myself doing this a lot with campaigns, is I pick two options to happen. And I'm not saying you kill a bad or you sacrifice yourself or whatever it happens to be, but more like with this campaign, the more things that they do that are more winter fae related, winter will take over. And the more summer would take over. So it's not necessarily they're going to be fighting a bad. Honestly, their game could end incredibly gloomy, or it can end happy. It all just depends. And I find myself doing that a lot with a lot of different campaigns.
I don't put a lot of thought towards the ending, and I think that may be a weakness. Basically, there are things going on. The players are doing things to try to deal with what's going on. And the endings for me just come around more naturally, which is why it tends to be a combat. That ending will happen, and then Chad will hit something.
Yes.
Which is the funny thing is, I'm not even kidding. Chad, the social guy, the hates combat, and he is the most combat player in my game. He is the first to throw a punch.
It's like the laziest person is the hardest worker, because I don't like combat. So of late, I have made incredibly efficient characters in that regard.
So they don't like it, but once they get into it, they really mean it.
I don't like it, but once I put them into it, they end it quickly.
That is,
so we can get on with the fun stuff.
Yeah, people are talking and he punches something.
Fair enough.
Hey, they were talking about stupid stuff.
It ends the combat, you know? You drop the A-bomb, it's over. I think there are two other things that you ought to look at as well. I don't know whether I'd say these are equally important or less important. I think the first point I made, I would posit, is perhaps the most important because of the fact that you're telling a story, you need an ending that fits the story. But two other things I would look at as well is, what do the players want? You may have one perception of what the game is about, but the person sitting to your right may have a different perception. That could come in a couple forms. For example, in that D&D game, Pat wanted to establish dominance. Gnarl wanted to prove that gnolls could be something more than monsters. Pat and I were both looking for something different out of that game. Mm-hmm. Neither of us was right, neither of us was wrong. But had that campaign ended without those at least getting some attention, then that game would have felt very incomplete.
I had a plan for both of them.
In my case, it was nothing so grand. I was doing a redemption arc that could have very well led to the death of the character. I would have been fine with that as long as he went down that arc.
Right. And I think you can also look even beyond the player characters to the players themselves to say, look, what is it they're after? I mean, listen to the table chatter. Are they really pissed off at this one particular villain? If so, at
then
some...
you're succeeding.
Then you're succeeding, but at some point in the game, you've got to deal with that person.
Yeah, they
got
to kill him.
Even if they were a side character or just meant to be a Joe Nobody, they've got to be dealt with. So look at what the players want. Because if they walk out of the theater, so to speak, unsatisfied with how it ended, then you as a storyteller have missed out at some point. But I think it is equally fair for the GM to look at what they want. When they set up the story, look, they had certain storytelling goals. There is something that motivated them to run this story in this particular manner. And I think it is fair for the game master to say, there is something that I want to see occur, whether that's a theme explored, a bad guy killed, whatever the issue is. I think it is fair for the game master to look at what it is that they want out of that campaign and to measure that into how they're going to end things.
I ran a Battletech game many, many, many years ago, and it had a lot of these interpersonal relationships. It was about a garrison on a planet, and they were very tiny, and the planet was backwater nothing, and it got invaded by a huge invasion force. Nobody knew why. Why the hell would a huge invasion force invade this nothing planet? They were a munitions producer, but I mean, they produced bullets, like machine gun bullets. Like, we're talking battle mechs here, so who cares? It was just nothing. There was nothing. There's no reason for these people to be here. So there's this big mystery, right? And, you know, the players being the garrison, this tiny, tiny little garrison, they took to the hills and fought a guerrilla action. Part of the guerrilla action was not just doing map combats and shooting at them from the hills, but it was getting out of the mechs and going into the cities and finding out why they were here and dealing with people and trying to rally the people. But they all had their own personal problems, right? They all had their own issues that they were trying to deal with, and they were not equipped, trained, emotionally able to handle fighting a guerrilla action against a modern, highly trained assault force that was designed for this sort of thing. And it's about how they worked through it and how they succeeded this. But it wasn't just about, we're the good guys, they're the bad guys, and we're going to jump through hoops and jump through hoops and jump through hoops, and then we're going to shoot the bad guys, and then we win in the end. It was about dealing with these problems and maybe not dealing with the problems and trying to make their plans work anyway and dealing with these other people and their problems and their issues and their stories. So suffice it to say that there was a lot of character threats that were out there that needed to come together for the ending. Now, I think what a lot of people do, or what they would try to do in this situation, is that they would have the big climax, which in this situation is obviously going to be a big battle. The bad guys there, they got the guns, you're the good guys, you have the guns, and you're setting up for a battle that is gives you all the advantage so that you can kick them off the planet, and asking nicely isn't going to work. So there is going to be a big battle. All right, that's fine, but we had like 5 or 6 people and they all had plot threads and they all had emotion, and you can't bring those threads together in a satisfying conclusion in a battle. So we had to deal with them. So there was, yeah, there was the big climax at the end, but I had to pace it so that leading up to the end, I started tying off those plot threads. So by the time they got to the big set piece battle, those things had been dealt with. So when we, you know, when the curtains closed and the lights went out and people were done applauding, all those things were taken care of.
Right.
And there were even a couple of ones where I just couldn't tie everything up.
So you killed those characters, right?
No. In fact, we had a no death rule in the campaign. Couldn't die in the campaign. I had to tie those up in an epilogue and in an afterwards. And that was fine too. But yeah, I mean, I think the point is not to look at your climax and say, okay, well, I'm going to have a big battle, or I'm going to have a big encounter, or I'm going to have a big talking to the Grand Council meeting, or whatever. I'm throwing the ring in the volcano. It doesn't matter what it is. It's not necessarily fighting and dice rolling, but you have your big climax. That's not important. That's going to happen. No matter what, if you win the campaign, that's going to happen. You're going to get there. Challenges for the GM, and the players need to help out in this too, is to wrap it up, is to pull in those characters' plot threads, the bad guys' plot threads, because they were even dealing with NPCs. They had an infantry platoon, and they had a hover tank, and these guys were all crazy, and they loved them, and it was great, and they were barbecuing with them and stuff, and then the invasion happened, and they're like, okay, we're going to go to the hills and fight, and we're like, yeah, that's great. And the enemy officers were in a restaurant filled with people and family, and the infantry platoon planted a bomb in the restaurant and blew up. Killed the officers, killed the family, killed the women, killed the children, killed everybody, killed the waitstaff, knocked over the building next to it.
They went from freedom fighter to terrorist.
Yes, and suddenly our heroes, the players, the mech warriors, suddenly our freedom fighters had to look at themselves and say, oh, who's the enemy here? Because we know those assholes who invaded are the enemy, but really it's more why are they here? That's the mystery. But these guys, they're our own people. Do we talk to them? Do we shoot them? Do we join them? So that's another thing that's not just the characters, but that's like outside forces. You can't just ignore that, especially because I spent a week and a half building that up.
Right.
Like before in the pregame, I made these guys awesome, right? And I knew my group, and I knew how to make my group really, really, really like these guys. And then the invasion happened, and they really helped out. And it's like, man, we would be sunk without this platoon. Boom. And they're just like, you have to deal with that.
You raised a very important point, which is there's a difference between closure and the finale.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at the things that are out there in the game.
The finale is going to happen regardless.
Right. And not just is it going to happen, but the finale, while it can have layers to it, mm-hmm. you can have dialogue while combat's going on and moral decisions.
And like we said in the last episode, it doesn't have to be combat.
Right. Precisely. Anything. But my point being, though, that it could be many things at once.
Mm-hmm.
But the finale really is a relatively limited moment of time and a limited amount of narrative. You can only accomplish so much in it.
And you can't trace all of your loose plot threads if you have a whole bunch into that
precisely
moment, because then it's a jumble.
So well, let me use it.
Sounds kind of cheesy too.
Yeah. Listen,
and if you look at like the end of this last Dresden arc, there we did an epilogue after it. And part of that reason is some of the things we were dealing with couldn't be dealt with until the resolution of that final battle. As I tied up a lot of loose ends before it, but some things just couldn't be dealt with until you knew what happened there.
Yeah.
Let me give another example, which is of a Star Trek game that I ran years ago. I mean, probably 10 years ago. We've talked about the Star Trek FASA game on here before. And one of the cool things about that game is you have to roll up your history. So as you're going, you know, you roll out what you did at each stage of your life. And then when it comes time to actually see what tours of duty have I been on prior to the game starting, you roll where you were at, you roll how well you did. And it starts to create this neat little narrative if you're creative enough to kind of look at that. And the group that I was running for, these were very cerebrally minded people. They wanted kind of the thinking man Star Trek. They wanted the science mystery. And so I gave them that. You know, that's easy for me. That comes naturally to me as a GM. So I gave them a great science mystery to solve in the course of this game. That's what the game was about. If I was to describe the central core point of this game, that game was about the science mystery. And so the plot involved that, and ultimately the finale of the game was them solving the science mystery. But there were a lot of other things along the way that the players wanted out of the game. For example, several of them had in their backstories that they had kind of failed forward. They had really not done that well on prior assignments, and so they had a lot to prove on this assignment. And so being able to not just succeed, but to prove their value was important. It was a really eclectic team. And I don't take quite such a glowing view of the future as Gene Roddenberry did. And so that eclectic group of people wasn't always seen eye to eye. And many of them were looking for acceptance. They were looking to prove that they could work together. And one of the things that occurred throughout the game was they really learned to trust each other. A lot of teamwork built up. And I, as a game master, presented situations that gave them the chance to express that and, in a sense, to resolve it. And I won't say resolve in the sense that it was over, but to resolve it in the sense that you could tell they had made major progress, major things that happened. Before I talked about there being 3 points, what the campaign's about, what the players want. The third point, what does the game master want? There were certain big epic scenes I had in mind where I wanted certain things to happen. I wanted a particular character. Chad, this is a character that goes all the way back to our first Star Trek campaign back in like 1988.
This guy with the bedroll?
No, it was a different guy. But I decided that I wanted to try and mature him and do more with him. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to bring him back into this game and make him a really serious entity, a really serious character. And I successfully did that.
Yeah.
I decided that when this whole thing ended, I wanted there to be this massive, like planet-sized type space station and whatever, and all kinds of things were going to happen with that. And I managed to work that in there. I managed to put those plot points in there. And what I did was, as the players did what they did in the game, I just kind of readjusted those plot points and reworked them so they made sense. It wasn't a railroad, but I was still able to get those in there. And I was able, by writing some of the NPC dialogue in certain ways. And at one point, the party got separated from their ship. And so the first officer, who was an NPC, ended up in command of the ship, which kind of put him in a position of power, so to speak. And through him, I was able to make sure that I got certain narrative scenes that I wanted out of the game. And so I was able to express what I wanted. And so all those things figured together, and all those things built into the game and built up towards the finale. But I do want to stress that, look, you only have a finite amount of space to work within the finale. Yes, it is possible to have a multi-layered finale, but don't get overly ambitious, because you may find yourself struggling to keep it straight or fumbling over yourself. If you're at all uncomfortable with it, keep it simple and just go back to that original question of what is this game about at its core? What do the people really care about? And make sure that one central theme is the one thing, if nothing else, that gets resolved. Let's move from that to talking about something.
Dan, what's your favorite ending to a game that you've played? Not run, but played.
Not run, but played.
Wayne, what's yours?
I've never played in a campaign that had an ending.
Aww.
The only ending,
not ending.
The only endings were the ones that I've run. Mm-hmm. So I
there's one where
I can't really
Dicks drove to Chicago. Not favorite. Give me that to think
of. Oh, is this the way to put it? They all had endings. They didn't have finales.
Gotcha. Julia?
I would have to say the module I said that we broke just because it was so interesting. But I ended up pretty much I had some shoes of like water walk or something like that. And in the rules, and I don't know, I could be completely wrong. Maybe we just couldn't find it and we were just in the moment and just wanted to do it. But I could technically walk on lava. I just couldn't take the damage. Well, my orc could take the damage. Mm-hmm. And so I rode an orc across a river of lava to stab the big bad with the weapon that was made to kill him. And it was brilliant. I rode an orc across a lava river.
Nice.
I mean, come on.
It wasn't a campaign, but one of my favorite endings came from a one-shotter that was run by Meow Meow. And it was
your brother's name's Mike, and you can't pronounce his name.
His name is spelled correctly.
Oh, okay.
Wait, what?
But there's a fan, and his name is Michael, but it's spelled M-I-K-E-L.
Like Mikkel.
Yeah, Mikkel, but it's not Mikkel, it's Michael.
It's Michael.
Okay.
My favorite one-shot ending is one of his as well, but I can never share it because people may play that game.
But by pure coincidence, to finish that story, right about the time that I was talking to him about some things, a guy from Poland got in contact with me. And in Poland, apparently M-I-K-E-L is pronounced Michał. As strange as that is, it's pronounced Michał. And I thought the two were the same person at one point. And so I just started pronouncing his name Michał, and it just...
I think he rolled with it for a while.
Yeah, and it just kind
finally
of...
Says, yeah. I didn't even take off track. That just surprised me.
But he was running a game at Fear the Con. It was a post-apocalyptic game. And that game ended with one guy who was kind of a brute, who really wanted to do the right thing and didn't think too much about the consequences, took a great big bomb into the enemy complex, and there was another character who had a lot more to live for. As best I recall, the character had a daughter and all this other stuff, and was going to go with him to make sure that it got there and it detonated, and I was playing the group's doctor. I sedated this character, threw this character into the escape boat or whatever, and we took off down the river. It was a fantastic ending because of the fact that if you look at what the game was about, these big bads and their complex of evildom got destroyed. But at the same time, the character drama, those that had something to live for kept living. Those that had nothing to live for did not keep living. And so there was this great convergence of what the game was about and also what the characters were about and what the players wanted out of the game. I can't speak of what the GM wanted for the game because I have no idea what Meow Meow wanted. But nonetheless, that at least those parts all came together. Now, this leads me to one final thought here, which I at least want to hit on quickly in the time that we've got left here, which is epilogues. Have you guys ever run a game that had an epilogue? Okay, so the finale's over. And I, for example, in a D&D game that I ran, did have an epilogue after the big bad was defeated. Because of the fact that there were still some questions about the characters and their lives that were unanswered, not a lot, but there were a few. And so with each of these characters, if any of them did not have sufficient closure on what was going on, I did not narrate the epilogue. Because in a sense, to me, that kind of violates the whole golden box principle. I don't want to simply tell you, this is what your character did in the hereafter. Because, like, wait a minute, you know, how my character survives a story and what he or she goes on to do, to me, is very important. But I did nonetheless give these people some moments of role play that gave a very definitive sense of ending. For example, there was one character who it had become clear really was no longer fit to live in that world anymore. And so he was invited to go on to live in other places and to do other things. He ended up agreeing to doing that and went on to do so. There was another guy that really did not have much of a sense of purpose and had been kind of taken under the wing of this goddess during the whole thing. And so she kind of invites him because her religion was dead. She kind of says, I will make you my champion. I will make you my, not quite my avatar, but, you know.
More like my bitch.
My bitch, yeah, basically to reach back into this world. And he accepted that. And so I took these loose ends, and it was not some huge, long, 450-page Lord of the Rings epilogue. But nonetheless, over the course of, a couple hours of gaming, we did pass the death of the big bad, go on to tell the story of these characters and to explain how their stories ended.
I've done epilogues before. I think they're very important. The epilogues I've done are the sort of narrative ones where it's just me telling my interpretation, not of you do this, but more this is what happens to you sort of thing. We had one character in the Baltech game I was talking about. He was insane. And he was fighting this, and he was trying to keep it together to fight the invasion force and to do all this stuff. And he was trying to keep it together, and sometimes he was losing. He was trying to keep it together. And eventually, they were able to fight off the bad guys and figure out why they were there and save the day. And he just couldn't hold on anymore, and he just broke. And then the reinforcements came, and the cavalry came, and they kind of took him and took him away. And there was another character who was in love with him, and she tried to find him. She spent years looking for him to try and find him and what they did with him. And it was stuff like that.
I played in a Shadowrun game where I told him it seemed like a movie, so it was really awesome. But one of those movies like the Avengers where you know there's going to be another one. So it like ended. It was, we're Shadowrunners, so we all, of course.
So the epilogue had a stinger?
Yeah, it was kind of fun. Well, no, it did not have a stinger. But go ahead.
Game by Julia. Writing by Julia. Executive produced by Julia. Cupcakes made by Julia. And then you just do this for like 20 minutes, and then they have to sit there
and
sit
wait,
there, and you have and like wait. Music playing on your iPhone, and they have to sit there and sit there and sit there, and then they're like stinger, and then they all get to act for like, yeah. But you have 30 seconds, so make it good. And
then you see Baron von Badass has failed.
Mm-hmm.
But King Kickass still sits atop his throne.
Yes. It wasn't quite that obvious that we could do another one. It was more of a, hey, if you guys want to do another Shadowrun, we can with these characters. But we were just all hanging out, and all of a sudden my money's gone. So that was...
Yeah.
See, I did an epilogue just a few weeks ago, and it was a matter of, like I said, some things couldn't be tied up until the big events happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so once that happened, I told everyone at the end of the week, okay, next week we're going to do an epilogue session.
Chad and can't kill anybody.
And right. No punching.
No punching.
No punching.
My character's very punchy.
Everyone came in knowing we're going to use the session to wrap up some things. You don't have to wrap everything up because we're going to do another arc. But anything that is, standing out from this arc that needs to be wrapped up, anything your character still wants to do, this is the chance to do it. And then some new plot threads got added in here and there. Chad became the Goblin King.
He stopped being a punchy.
No. I'm punchy with authority now. I'm king of the goblins of St. Louis.
Well, I think that epilogues and chapters are just as important because there's a lot of times where it's really hard for characters to initiate character growth on their own. And chapter epilogues really do help with that because then you can wrap up a very small portion and be able to grow in a step form.
And,
there was definitely some of that.
I don't have a problem with the epilogues being semi-narrative because of the fact that I think to role play out what happens over the next 10 years can get unbelievably tedious. But I think, Chad, kind of to your example you gave earlier, I would want some hand in it. I would want some hand in kind of saying, this is generally what I set out to do. And then you can wrap that in a broader story or, flesh that out into a more narrative form. But I would not want to simply be told, well, this is what happened, and this is whether you succeeded or failed, and whatever you had in mind, tough crap. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, I've spent my whole campaign developing this character. I've picked every action he's done, every word he's said. I don't think I would want to then suddenly have the next 5 or 10 years of his life shorthanded by fiat.
I think it's important to talk to your players, too. I mean, because during that campaign, I remember you and I had a lot of conversations that were not during the game or anything like that about Gnarl, about the gnolls, about their society. And I was really trying to find out, because I had in mind what would happen, not with the plot, but with the gnolls and trying to rebuild this gnoll society. And I just could not see it working in the end. Like, Gnarl's vision to me was, I see why he had the vision and the character is awesome, but it can't work because gnolls and the humans cannot live side by side. Either the humans are going to kill the gnolls and the gnolls are going to kill the humans. And that was kind of the route I was seeing, but that was just my interpretation of it.
Right.
So, like, if we were to end the campaign, I had no plans on just dropping that. I kept talking to you about it. I kept asking you questions about the society, and then I was pitching some of my ideas for it, and you were kind of turning and edging those ideas in a different direction, the more correct direction, because I gave you the gnolls and the gnoll society. That was not my part of the world. That was your part of the world. And I needed to figure that out as the game master. And so that was part of that correction. That was part of me talking to you about that all the time. And I talked to Wayne and I talked to Pat. Pat was pretty easy to figure out, you know, he's power hungry bad man. And so it was awesome.
So, Morgan, I hope in this episode we were able to more fully answer your question, which really we only just kind of set some boundaries around in the prior episode. I hope that everyone was able to get at least a little something out of this show. As for the rest of you guys, I want to thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you at the
same boot time, same boot channel
next week.
It just happened.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.